How do we get Americans to appreciate America? In fact, I've often written on the subject of how we live during the era of the ungrateful American. Hello and welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is one of our favorites, a returning guest. His name is Bill Federer. He's a best-selling author. He's written many books, including the Miracles in American History series and also America's God and Country. Bill, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you.
So have you noticed that we are living in the era of the ungrateful American? Recently, one black commentator said, in fact, he said this just last week, he said, in his opinion, the Constitution is trash because it has nothing to say to him or to other blacks or to gay people, etc. And I'm thinking, wait a minute now, when the founders created the Constitution, they set up the framework by which, you know, one day the principles imbibed, you know, in the Declaration of Independence would absolutely be applied. And they have been. And, you know, it's not been a perfect union. In fact, they even said we're striving for a more perfect union. But trash? Good grief.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, if you don't know history, then you don't appreciate America. I one time stuttered off a presentation with a picture that you're so zoomed in, all you see is the pixels. And I asked the audience what you're looking at. They said, I don't know. And I clicked zoom out and still couldn't tell. Click zoom out a bunch more times. Finally, you could begin to see it looks like a nose and then a face. And then you could recognize the person. Sometimes we're so zoomed into the day-to-day news that all you see is the pixels, what's happening today. And you ask people, what's going on in the world? I don't know. Let's zoom out and look at a couple weeks. Let's look at a couple months, a couple years, a couple centuries, a couple millennium. It's like, okay, the further out you zoom, you begin to recognize what's going on. And so for most of world history, it's top down. It's kings, pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, sultan, czars. And your life is only of worth if you serve the guy at the top, the gang leader. And if you don't serve him, then your life is worthless and it's called treason and he can kill you or make you a slave. People say, I thought slavery started in 1619. No, wherever you had the first king on top, you had slaves on the bottom. It's a pyramid structure to society. You know, even Hammurabi's code talked about slaves on the bottom. And so America, we broke away from the most powerful king on the planet, the King of England. He was a globalist. He had India, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guiana, Canada, Barbados, Bermuda, Jamaica, and America. He was a one-world government guy, and America's founders broke away and flipped it and made the people the king. So the word citizen is Greek. It means co-king. And a republic is where the people are king, ruling through representatives. And so when somebody protests the flag or trashes the Constitution, what they're saying is, I don't want to be king anymore. I protest this system where I participate in ruling myself. It's like, really? Somebody else is glad to usurp power and go back to a dictatorship. And so the Constitution is basically a way to take the power of the king, pull it all apart, and give it to the people. But unfortunately, when people get scared, they'll trade freedom for security. And so there's a whole bunch of political philosophers throughout history that intentionally want to get people into fear. It's called fear mongering, because once people get in fear, they will easily knee-jerk reactions surrender their freedoms to some dictator who promises a solution. We talked to some people that were in Turkey, and they said that most of the educated people do not like Erdogan. But he goes to the poor people and he says, look, I'll give you money. I'll give you free stuff. And they're like, oh, really? And so they vote for him. And then he ends up being a dictator. So there's tactics on how to take power from the people. And so when somebody doesn't like the Constitution, what they're saying is they don't like the system where the people participate in ruling themselves. And the alternative to that is to let the power concentrate into the hands of fewer and fewer people, ultimately a dictator.
That's so true. You know, it's sad though to see, especially because, you know, let's be honest. I mean, America does have some serious flaws in its history, as do other nations, you know, in terms of the way blacks were mistreated or the way Indians were mistreated. But I like what this guy, Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center, civil rights leader, an African-American scholar, by the way, he helped assemble people to rebut the 1619 Project with 1776 Unites. But he said, What, in effect, what they're doing is the 1619 Project, which postulates that America began in 1619, not 1776, because 1619 is when the first slaves were brought over from Africa. He says, in a sense, what they're trying to do is define America according to the worst of what we used to be. According to the what the, you know, the worst of what we used to be. He said nobody should be defined by the worst of what they used to be. And so, you know, but there's a, you know, there's a glory fest within liberalism today to bash anything, you know, American, take the knee, you know, basically disrespect America and what America stands for.
Yeah, well, they're participating in something called deconstruction, and it's a tactic where you portray a country's past negatively so people emotionally detach from it, and then the people are in a neutral where they don't have a memory of where they came from, and then you brainwash them into whatever future you have planned for them, and we're seeing that take place. But again, big global picture. Freedom of slaves did not take place in Islam. Muhammad himself owned black slaves. Muhammad was a white Arab, and there are hadiths, these are stories that are passed down, that said Muhammad was the white man reclining on his arm. Another hadith said that he raised his arms to say a certain prayer, and they saw the whiteness of his armpits. Another hadith, a guy was riding on his donkey, rubbed up against Muhammad. He said, I saw the whiteness of the prophet's thigh. And Muhammad owned black slaves, and throughout the history, Islam enslaved 180 million Africans. They actually have one word in Arabic for a black person and a slave. It's the same word, abid. And so we look at it, the abolitionist movement didn't start in Islam, and it didn't start in India, where they have a caste system, where the top in society are the Brahmin, they're near divinity, and the lowest are the untouchables, the Dalits, and their job is to take care of the garbage and clean the sewers. I mean, they have a whole caste of people that are effectively slaves, and there's no mechanism for them to improve their status in life. And maybe, you know, they believe in reincarnation. Well, if you're a good, you know, sewer cleaner, maybe in your next life you'll be reincarnated higher. But in this life, there is no mechanism for you to rise up. Abolition of slavery and the raising up of people's rights did not start in China. 5,000 years of emperors, and it's a pyramid structure. You have the emperor, and then you have the 100 family names of the upper class people. Then that, down at the bottom, you have the jajamin, the base people, the debtors. They're slaves. There's been no effort to raise them up to equality with the other groups. Communist countries, where your worth is dependent on your utility, your usefulness to society. And if the dictators, the Communist Party members, view you as not contributing to their power, they'll use the power of the state to crush you and kill you. Equality didn't originate in that system. It happened in America. It happened with Judeo-Christian values. It happened with the Second Great Awakening Revival, which spilled over to Europe, which inspired William Wilberforce to champion ending of slavery over there. And so they ended slavery in 1807, the same year that they ended the slave trade in 1807, the same year that Thomas Jefferson was president, and he enforced the clause in the Constitution to end the importation of slaves into America in 1807. But it took almost until the 1830s till William Wilberforce successfully got the British Empire to free the slaves. But unfortunately in America, we have the Democrats in the Deep South that owned slaves, and they resisted every legislative attempt. Finally, we got a Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, and we had the Civil War to end slavery in America. But the abolition of slavery was fueled by the Quakers in 1688. They were the first ones to have a petition against slavery in America, to John Wesley, a Christian who founded Methodism, and he said, he described it as the execrable sum of all villainies. And so the Methodists began ordaining the first black preachers. Like Richard Allen was an African Methodist Episcopal preacher, and so they, as a denomination, championed ending slavery, and it eventually spread to other denominations. Charles Finney, the preacher during the Great Awakening Revival, was the president of Oberlin University, which graduated the first woman, black woman, graduate from any college anywhere, and it was Charles Finney that pushed it. Her name was Mary Patterson. And so we see that the abolitionist movement was fueled by Christians in America, not by Muslims over in Arabia or Pakistan, not by Hindus in India, not by the Chinese, not by communists. It was Christians in America. And so what we were fighting against is selfish human nature. And the only thing that can get around selfish human nature is a born-again heart, is somebody who experiences forgiveness through Jesus, and then they want to show their love of God to everyone else, and it eventually spills over into politics.
Okay, so Bill, we have 4 minutes left, and here's the deal. Here's the challenge. In light of the fact that in the schools and the curriculum, the views expressed along the lines of what I said earlier about the black commentator saying the Constitution is trash, that America is hopelessly racist, all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, it's so infused in the schools and even in the popular culture. How do we get Americans to appreciate America? I guess it's just maybe one heart at a time. So we've got a few minutes. Go ahead and wax eloquent.
Well, I wrote a book called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, and it's written for the young person. I go back to Plato's the first one that talked about everybody owning everything in common. Sounds nice until you think it through. Somebody's got to be in the government handing out all this common stuff, and they're human beings, and they're always going to be tempted to funnel a little extra to their family and friends on the side, and be tempted to hold back from someone they just do not like. And before you know it, it gets discretionary. And the saying is, he who holds the purse strings has the power. And so every attempt at everybody owning everything equally always ends up with a deep state bureaucracy that hands all this stuff out, ruled by the most corrupt of them all, as a dictator on top. And so what we saw in the Bible is, rather than the government control everything, God gave every family private property. They go into the promised land. Everyone gets private property. If you own property, you can accumulate stuff. The Bible called that being blessed. And you can be moved upon in your heart to give away some of your stuff. That is called charity. And so the poor people were taken care of in this Israeli system because everybody would leave the gleanings of their field. They would leave the extras. They would give voluntarily. Take care of their neighbor rather than a system that forcibly takes away your stuff and redistributes it, but always ends up benefiting the person doing the redistributing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And we have about a minute and a half left.
So my website, AmericanMinute.com, I have this book, Socialism, and I go through the French Revolution, for example. Their motto is liberty, equality, fraternity. It sounds nice, but it doesn't work. Liberty is experienced individually. Fraternity is their word for socialism. It's the club, the group, the collective, the state, the mob. And equality can be understood two ways. In America, it was equal treatment before the law. But in France, it was everyone having an equal amount of stuff. And if the fraternité, the group, the state, thinks you have too much stuff, it can use the power of the state to trample your individual liberty, confiscate all your stuff, redistribute it, and even kill you. And so the idea is that you want to limit the state and trust the individuals and put religion, Christianity, into the mix, that if people are going to church and they're hearing the scriptures that says, whatever you do to the least of these, my brethren, you've done unto me, then people are motivated to want to care for their neighbor voluntarily rather than a system that does it forcibly that ends up benefiting those that are in the deep state.
Okay, so 30 seconds. How do we get America to appreciate
the Constitution? America is basically a bunch of hurdles to prevent a president from ruling by mandates. That's what the Constitution is. Take the power of a king, separate it into three branches, separate it federal to state level, tie it up with 10 handcuffs we call the first 10. All the Constitution is to prevent the rubber band from snapping back into the hands of a dictator.
So in effect, the Constitution itself provides the freedom by which these people, you know, will say all these bad things about the Constitution and about the country itself. So we're out of time, but we'll have you on again sometime, Bill, because I think you're a wealth of information. AmericanMinute.com, Bill Federer. Thanks, Bill. God bless you.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.